The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions. Unfiltered
opinions. Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
Does he secure the bag?
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Moyala.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to Insider Exchange. Welcome to the show. Market Matters, live streamed for your viewing pleasure, as we say, every Monday, with the rest of the show set later in the week. We do apologize that we are running a little bit late at this time. You usually get your lives a little earlier in the morning, but nevertheless, we will bring you all of the insights that we can. We are taking a look at the greatest breakup of all time. And I wish I could play the Whitney Houston song, The Greatest Love of All Time, because this is no longer love. But we'll look at that in a moment. We'll also take a look at the sale of De Beers. Anglo is mulling that over. And if we've got time, we'll get into the Goodyear decision to potentially close down their operations in South Africa, putting at risk about 900 jobs. Let's start with, I suppose, the greatest breakup of all.
Hey, didn't we call it? Didn't everyone call it? When two narcissists, small man children, get into the same room.
Something's going to give, right? Something's going to happen.
I can't remember if we can swear on this podcast or not, but you know what comes.
Well, it is ours. So generally,
I suppose it wasn't surprising, and there's been lots of tensions at points, particularly more recently. But it was the speed at which, wasn't it like a week ago he was getting a fake looking key, like a Christmas cracker key, and then a week later he's like threatening, like to have.
So the speed was quite interesting because someone then suggested on one of the socials, I think it was X, that this is all staged, that they want us to believe there's a fallout, they're planning something bigger and all of that. And I thought about it, and I thought, you know what, if it is staged, it would be a great kind of way to jolt the markets. And that's what Trump has been doing. I mean, he has been making statements to move markets very intentionally and very deliberately. But what I would like to believe, and this rests with the comment that you made earlier about two big man children, is that it seems too far-fetched for them to be smart enough to think about engineering it this way.
Agreed. And I think there are some real challenges. Firstly, some real conflicts. Firstly, Musk came in promising $2 trillion of savings via his doggy. And got what, maybe 150 billion? And that number's in dispute. And it's a big number, but A, it's in dispute. But B, it's also much of that was not corruption and the like. It was things like USAID and CDC, which is hugely important for America's soft power. And they must never, and their soft power has now been pissed away out the window. I mean, that is just gone. And then the flip side is that Musk is a, you know, the most important thing is to cut that budget debt. And that means budget surpluses. And then they go and do tax cuts and a budget increase the budget, get a deficit, and he's just anti that. Now, to be clear, I'm quite surprised because if you look at what Trump's playbook is, and you can argue its efficiency, you can argue Trump's ability, Taco, to follow through with it, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. But part of his thing is that tax cuts are going to stimulate the economy, and that will then help, you know. So you put tariffs on one side and you make some money. They made $20 billion on tariffs in May. You do tax cuts to push more money in, you drop interest rates, and you move regulations on companies, and those all collectively then get you a surplus. Mm. So this is one of his pillars, but it's not a Musk pillar by any stretch of imagination. So I think there is real tension between the two of them.
It's weird because when you look at the tension and you look at just some of the comments that are being made, one person is attacking another person's character, the other one's saying, oh, you're just jealous. Then there's a bill involved. And like you said, if this is part of Trump's bigger plan, part of that is what we've spoken about as well, is reducing the value of the dollar, the reliance of the dollar in the global ecosystem, because one, your interest payments come down from a USD perspective on the bonds that you then roll over. But two, you're also then almost effectively achieving that reset that we spoke about a couple of episodes ago. So there are are a lot of kind of both sides to the equation that make sense and make for both arguments. But I think ultimately, when you look at it and you're like, but guys, this is almost as nasty as Diddy and 50 Cent, right? And that's a public thing that's been going on for many, many years. But I mean, this is, I don't want to say unbecoming, because that implies that we expected better from Orange Mussolini. And
no, I mean, look, we do expect better from the president of the US, but not this
president. Not this president of the United States. Fair enough.
And it is, I mean, it's also, remember there was a 130-day thing, which is at about now, so hence the key and everything else. And of course the poor MAGA heads are just so confused. it's like, who do we love? It turns out, the Washington Post did a survey. It turns out the MAGA heads are quite happy to throw Elon Musk under the bus. But Elon Musk has got a problem here, because Trump is not, he is quite happy to go after his enemies. We have seen this happening
absolutely
in real time. He has the power of the American government behind him to do it. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't like Musk, there's stuff that he can do that can make Musk's life very unpleasant.
You say that, and I remember some of the comments online. Someone was saying, deport him. And then the South Africans on X commented, like, no, we don't want him back.
Well, he came via Canada, so deport him to Canada. We do not.
Yeah, but to your point, so there's a lot that the president of the United States can do. He's empowered to do those
and
sorts of things.
He has shown to do it. I mean, to be clear.
Yeah. The one thing that I am appreciating about this fallout is the market reaction. Markets are selling dollar. The market is just saying, you know what? We don't know what you people are busy with in the White House or the Oval Office. Just we're going to find other things to invest in, right? South Africa's all share, all-time highs, were almost at 100,000 points, the top 40, having a bullish start to the day as well, also almost at all-time highs that we saw last week as well. Markets and market sentiment right now is shifting very much to saying away from the United States until the United States has figured out whatever that figure out is. And if it takes them 1,300 and however many days left of the presidency to figure it out, then from our side, the markets are steaming on elsewhere.
So you're 100% right. And we can see they're exiting the dollar index at 98 and some change. US 10-year 4.481, it was 4.3 and some change last week, although it was 4.5. early this morning. But weirdly, then your NASDAQ and your S&P are like 1.5% of all-time highs. So they're running away from US debt. And that's also part of the whole. So there's this theory on the Mar-a-Lago Accord where so they weaken the dollar, but then their allies, which would be Canada, I think might be a little not so
before
keen.
You try to make them the 51st state.
Europe, again, like this is like, anyway, must be buyers of US treasuries, et cetera, et cetera. Also up their military spend to the full 2%. So that US can drop their military spend.
Yeah, but the US has already said they want to. They're considering pulling out of NATO. Yeah, Trump. That was one of the first things Trump said. So now, if I'm supposedly an ally of the United States, you're going to impose these things on me, and then you're going to have the benefit of doing whatever. Now, granted, America can argue that we've been spending all these years and you guys haven't. But this is something we touched on last week as well. Was Germany's come out to say they're going to increase their military spend, and now the world is like, do we really need a German military that? Now, that's a whole other conversation for another day. Again, we're putting a pin in that. But markets are very responsive to what's happening. And I suppose then that means that the US picture will continue to shape up the way it does, and markets will assess it on a need-to-know basis or an as-and-when kind of thing. And perhaps that's exactly what we need right now.
Yeah, sure. What we also have, remember, today's 9 June. You know what happens 9 July? 90 days.
Oh.
So he was always vague about the
90
days.
Who's 90 days?
Trump's 90 days.
Who's 90 days? China's 90 days, our 90 days, Europe's 90 days.
There's different 90 days all over the place. And was it 90 days from when he said 90 days? Was it 90 days from Liberation Day? We're not sure. Short answer is he had a cup of coffee with the UK and a telephone call. Actually, they actually met in Switzerland with China. But there's nothing happening. Although apparently China has lifted the brake on some of the restrictions on critical...
rare earth minerals. And there is a meeting coming up with China. Trump posted about it saying that he's deploying, I think, Secretary Besant and someone else to go meet with China to move the trade deal ahead. So there seems to be some urgency there. We don't know what's happening there. We'll keep an eye on that. But I do want to take a look at Anglo. Quick backstory, summary. If you haven't been on our channel for the last year, we don't know where you've been. That's your own fault. We'll come back to that. But backstory on Anglo. They received a buyout offer from BHP. They rejected it. They said they were going to unbundle themselves, unlock more value themselves that way. They sold off bits and pieces of some of their businesses. I think it was Amplats. They sold off about 5% in an accelerated book build. They did another 5%. Mm-hmm. And now they're looking to sell De Beers.
Mm-hmm.
And the De Beers sale is particularly interesting because the diamond market doesn't look anything near the way it did pre-lab-grown diamonds. So enter lab-grown diamonds. De Beers has their own lab-grown kind of business unit. That isn't doing well. They are shutting that down. But lab-grown diamonds have affected the price of diamonds in general, and diamonds are cheaper than they've been in a very long time.
And I'd go even further back. But De Beers essentially was a cartel. During the Second World War, the Oppenheimers considered taking millions and trillions of carats out into the Atlantic Ocean and just dumping it because there was too many diamonds in the world. And this was one way to solve that problem. So they had an absolute cartel. The Oppenheimers couldn't visit America because, like, cartels are illegal in America and therefore you go to jail. anyway, that's been resolved.
So I suppose this would be around Harry Oppenheimer's time. Nicky Oppenheimer.
Yeah,
so
correct.
Harry Oppenheimer.
This is Harry.
Then Nicky Oppenheimer, and now Jonathan Oppenheimer, the son. So Harry Oppenheimer's son.
So, but the problem they have, as you say, is lab grown. Now, I see that De Beers is actually shutting down their lab grown division.
Yes.
So they started for industrial use. Mm-hmm. Why spend big money when you could spend little money? Then everyone's like, well, why not just make them all in a microwave? And I appreciate it's a fancy microwave. But the problem that they have is, I mean, you walk through the fancy stores and you look at the diamonds and you've got your real and your lab grown, and like
they're identical.
The only difference is price. Well, actually, the lab grown is even better.
Yeah. So again, the lab grown is better because it can be perfected under certain conditions and all of that. But De Beers has come out with a very interesting standpoint on it. And I suppose it's because you have been the cartel that's operated in the space for so long. They've said they're going to continue with natural grown diamonds, but they're going to specifically aim that the natural grown diamond towards a higher end market, towards higher end uses. And I'm like, that's one way to protect the one market you have a monopoly in, because the threat of lab grown is a very real threat. So I suppose the question then becomes, from a sale perspective, who buys De Beers?
It's a good question. So, I mean, it's down to 4.1 billion. They've written it down from 2.9 just recently. I mean, and at one point, I think when Botswana took a stake, it was valued closer to 10 billion. Botswana is the big loser here, but that's a different story. Who buys it? Richemont. Who else?
Absolutely.
I mean, buy it. I mean, we could buy it for our respective partners. But really, 4.1? It's a lot of billions.
It's a lot of billions, eh? It's a lot of billions.
I mean, I don't know. Look, at the right price, So, in essence, so they might spin it out and try and list it. That's really throwing them under the bus. You know, they've got it. They're carrying it at $4.1 billion on their books at this time. If someone offered them $2 or $3 billion you didn't have, they would grab it. Richemont's got, like, 6 billion euros of cash on their balance sheet. Mm-hmm. But does Richemont want all this challenge? And to be clear, they're in a different part of the supply chain. Do they now want to become... Okay, so not
Do they
want
to go back into the supply chain? Okay, then the Oppenheimer family themselves.
Oh, no, the Oppenheimer family dodged that bullet and sold that double quick time. There are some big diamond miners, but I mean, I'm not sure.
But again, it comes down to use case, right? So if you see a future for the luxury in that space, a Richemont makes sense. But at the same time, you could very easily phone a...
Oh, there's a Russian company.
Yeah.
No, he maybe the largest diamond producer globally, maybe 31% share. They might want it.
They might want it, but you would also, I would just phone.
Rio Tinto has a diamond division.
I would just phone Bernard Arnault because LVMH doesn't have a diamond thing in there and he likes buying luxury things.
Yeah, but mining, eh?
Yeah. But you can put it into your handbags and then you can put it into your watches and you can put it into the rest of the luxury products that you produce.
Yeah, but you can just go buy the diamonds. Now you've got to mine.
Fair enough. Now you've got to worry about mining concerns and things. Yeah.
I mean, so the big ones are Alrosa, I'd never heard of. That's Russian. Then De Beers, which is about 29% market share. Alrosa is 31. Debswana, which of course actually is De Beers. They're confusing. Rio Tinto at about 17 million carats. So that's about 15% market share. And then Dominion Diamond, based in Canada, about 7 million carats. So that's 7% market share. I don't know who buys it. This, you know, everyone's running around and buying copper. Exciting. Copper.
But you've got use case for copper.
Exactly. Gold, because it's at record
store
highs, etc.
Jewelry.
Why do you want to buy something which is we can debate the validity of diamonds, but that diamonds are forever was a clever campaign. Mm-hmm. But prices are under pressure from lab-grown diamonds.
And the lab-grown market is not suddenly going to disappear because it's proven that it can stay.
Yeah. So you're in a declining industry, a declining demand industry. Mm-hmm. I don't know who would want to. I mean, who wants to, at the right price, anything's a deal.
But I mean, from a diamond perspective, the point that De Beers made around the fact that we still are targeting a high-end market, that could have a place. I mean, there's always a place for ultra luxury where it doesn't make sense why it's obscenely expensive, so people do that.
So this is a real diamond becomes a status symbol.
The problem is
you've got to walk around and tell everyone. It's like people who do, how do you know that someone, because they tell you. And so they've got to walk around with a sticker that says this is real, which is a little trashy.
A diamond tester that says, do you want to test it? But the diamond tester passes the same test on the lab grown as well, because that's technically an authentic diamond as well.
Tremendo.
All right. So we don't know who's going to buy De Beers. We don't know how the greatest breakup of all is going to end. What we do know is that all of these impact the markets, and markets have a strange way of reacting to things. So we'll keep an eye on things. We might just see a Richemont come in and make a surprise offer. We might even see someone else make an offer. We'll let you know. But we're going to leave Market Matters on that note, because that's all we have time for, unfortunately. That's Market Matters. In our deep dive this week, we are diving into the world of electrified vehicles. We're going to be taking a look at EVs, the EV space, and what it all means for South Africa. And for this one, we thought we'd bring in an EV specialist. She is the founder of recharged.co.za. She's been a resident EV specialist for the longest time, and she's a good friend of ours, Nafisa Akabor. She joins us in studio to take a look at the world of EVs and see what we make of them. Nafisa, thanks so much for taking the time. Thank you for getting up early in the morning. I know you had heated seats, so it didn't really make a difference, but thank you anyway. Thank you for coming through.
Hey, Jimmy, fantastic to finally meet you.
Yeah, good to have you on the show. So perhaps let's start the conversation there on the EVs, right? I'm in a Volvo XC60 Recharge at the moment. You're in a Mini Electric.
No, I was in a Mini Electric for six months. I'm now in a VW ID4 Pro.
Okay, so you're in a VW ID4 Pro. Si, you're in a Mazda MX-5. All three vehicles have heated seats.
Yes. And that's where I leave the conversation. I got to be honest, I love my Mazda, and I bet your car doesn't drift or wheel spin like mine does. Can you drift
an all-wheel drive? So the Volvo's an all-wheel drive. You could probably drift the smaller vehicles.
If it's rear wheel.
Yeah, if it's rear wheel, it's easier to do. I mean, you could try it in an all-wheel drive.
Can you spin from a robot?
I've got enough power to make it seem like I'm spinning from a robot.
You're trying to one-up us here.
No, that's because it's all I got. To be clear, my car's a 2009 model. In those days, batteries were for phones and Casio Walkmans.
And it's still firing, though. Your vehicle is still going.
Yes.
Right? So we've got 2025s. You've got a 2009, but we've all got heated seats. So they've been around for a while. But the EV world has kind of been one of those things where I think back to, say, pandemic, maybe 2020 or so, nobody ever thought we'd get to where we are in EVs. I mean, maybe you, Nafisa, because you've been keeping up with the EV space for a long time. But I think there was a lot of skepticism, and there is still a lot of skepticism in South Africa around how EVs work, whether or not it's worthwhile, range anxiety, all of those things. And we'll unpack all of those in a bit more detail. But we've come a long way, effectively, as a market for electrified vehicles, whether it's plug-in hybrids, full EVs and all of that. We've actually come a long way.
I think we recovered post-COVID because obviously the numbers took a dive there, but it's looking, I don't normally use the word exponential. I mean, nobody should just use it randomly, but our growth is looking kind of that way. So the growth is there. And also so many new Chinese entrants.
That's affordable. Looking at the BYDs, at the Dolphin or one of them. Mm-hmm. It's like a 500k car.
Great car.
She's driven them all.
She's driven all of them. No, but this is why
I must just park my EV. What's my thing? Jealousy aside.
but that's why we brought this
500k car.
Actually recommended it to my sister. She already has a previous gen Mini because she's got 10 trips a day for her kids, and she was like, she's not paying the price of petrol. Mm-hmm. So she was looking for another car, and I actually suggested the BYD Dolphin.
So let's use that as a good starting point for the conversation. Who then gets an EV? Because Simon does very little travel in the mornings. But I suppose an EV is then perfect for Si.
I do 500Ks a month.
But that's the thing. Surely then an EV is perfect for you because you don't do that much traveling.
On the same wavelength. I work from home. I attend events. I come here. Mm-hmm. So I don't drive a lot. I do run errands, attend events, basically. I think that's similar to you.
Yeah.
And then people who have kids who have multiple trips and extramurals, and you've got so many trips a day and you're doing it. So I think that's another factor. And if you work very close to where you live, My husband has a 1.5K commute, mm-hmm. so 3Ks a day. And
that's
I'm trying to...
700 meters. No, 250 meters.
Well, to here.
Yes.
No, it's less than that. Wow. It's about 80.
You could walk here.
No, I did walk here.
Walk here.
Okay.
No, if I drive here, it takes longer.
So there's a fair amount of people, I think, who fit that category where you don't drive a lot.
Mm.
Or if you drive so much, short distance trips, that the EV makes sense in urban areas.
Mm. I have a friend who actually prefers to live closer to where he works as opposed to living further out and paying less in terms of rent and then having a car to commute in. So willing to sacrifice on the car installment and say, I'd rather live closer to my work or my destination than have to commute and drive and all of that. And with the amount of traffic we have on Joburg roads, I mean, you were out this morning on the M1. I came through via back routes. There's traffic every morning,
traffic.
Right?
Yeah, it was crawling.
But what I'm finding that in the traffic, the EV makes sense. It's convenient. You're not sitting there and worrying about, okay, cool, this is how much fuel I'm using or whatever.
It's meant for the start-stop traffic, which is literally it.
And for some vehicles, like the plug-in hybrid I've been driving, you're able to actually recharge the vehicle
as you're driving,
right? So let's look at some of those factors. Full EV versus plug-in versus mild EV. Kind of what are the main differences?
So the hybrids as a whole is a bit of the best of both worlds.
Hmm.
I think if you're skeptical or you want to go the route, but you're not sure, it's great to get the plug-in hybrid. And then the car you're driving, I know it has a fair amount, like 90 kilometers of range.
Hmm.
That's a fair distance.
Is
you know?
It? What's the usual range on a plug-in hybrid?
It's definitely under 100 kilometers.
Okay.
But roughly around the 80, 90, I would say, or between 50 and 90.
Okay.
The mild hybrids have slightly less, you know. The hybrids kick in when you're overtaking someone and you're starting the car. That's why you notice it's silent and smooth and easy to drive. But the ones that have the dedicated battery, like the ones you're charging, 90 Ks is pretty decent.
And they charge with regenerative charging.
Yes.
So you've got two options, right? So you've got the option to plug it in to a charging station or set it to charge and then it charges as you brake. So as you drive, whatever kinetic energy.
And then
energy.
What's your fuel consumption? On that.
So that's what I found quite interesting. Your fuel consumption comes down dramatically when you drive it in hybrid mode. It is meant for that. So it is meant to then optimize your driving to say, if you're driving long distance, okay, we'll use the engine more, but you're getting better fuel economy there anyway. If you're driving short distances, we'll use the battery. So therefore, you still get the range on your full tank. The vehicle I had, the XC60, full tank was around 900 kilometers with the 80-90.
How big is your tank?
I don't know. I estimate 900 Ks. I'm probably putting at a 70, maybe a 75 liter tank. I haven't. I'll go check the spec and I'll come back to you on that. But either way, you still get the benefit of the range and the power. And I think for me, that's what I enjoyed about the drive. And I know we said we'd do this, and I'm going to take Simon into the car. We're going to experience the vehicle because maybe he'll buy an EV. Who knows? Anything's possible these days.
I can't. So my problem is I can't plug mine in. I live in a block of flats.
There's no charger in the
flats, and I'm six floors up. I can't get a cable down.
So let's go into those challenges, right? Yeah. So Si, that's one of the challenges that has been abundantly clear. Shortage of charging stations, inability to charge in certain conditions, right? The other one that has been a challenge, and it's a minor one. I don't know it, but I just thought of it from a practical sense, is the silence.
Ah.
Right?
Is that a bit jarring?
So for me, it's less the jarring on my part, but if I'm walking through Rosebank or Santon or wherever, and I'm crossing the road, I can hear an MX-5 coming up the highway at whatever speed or whatever approaching the robot as a pedestrian. As a pedestrian, I've literally driven around and pedestrians cross in front of you and they don't know the car's on. They don't know that at any moment you could hit them with the car. So perhaps the EV manufacturers should look into that. Like,
do you know
put
there's
a beep
an EU law
it.
About that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it can't be completely silent. That's why I think something put the fake sounds also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, pedestrians need to be aware that there's an EV approaching them. I also find the same with your cat. Like, my sister has her EV. If the cat is sitting in the yard sleeping, how do you know? You don't want to accidentally reverse over an animal,
that's
you know?
That's true.
That's another issue.
So when you put it in reverse, it does beep, but now it beeps almost like a truck. You know those trucks? You put a truck in reverse, it goes beep, beep, beep. Okay, not as loud.
A garbage truck.
not as loud. No, I will say the Volvo is a lot more eloquent in the sound, but that is the nature of Volvos, right?
Yeah.
But the sound was a big thing. The charging thing was a huge concern as well. And I suppose this is in line with the charging. It's the range anxiety. Yeah. How far can I go? What can I do? And I guess I didn't have range anxiety because of the fact that I knew I had
I had
the ICE engine anyway. But let's go through that because you and I have spoken about the charging side of it as well. There's more and more charging stations coming coming up. The likes of Charge or Zero Carbon Charge just got 100 million from the DBSA to build out more charging infrastructure.
Yeah, they're putting two on the N3 now. Mm. So you can go to Durban very comfortably. Yes.
Because I've said most of their ranges are 400 to 500. Mm. And if I'm going to Durban, now what?
You need and 300 you to get to Harry Smith, yeah.
And then you need those contemporary Amperex technology peeps with their batteries that gets to 80% in 10 minutes.
Yes, because that was another annoyance for me, was how long it takes to charge.
So another thing about the plug-in hybrids, except the BYD Shark, they only charge on AC chargers. And
yes,
that's very
not
slow.
DC charging.
Exactly, so that's an issue driving a plug-in hybrid.
Okay,
yeah.
So I wasn't normal for freaking out about that.
No, it does take a while.
Okay, okay.
And if you're putting it on a 3-pin plug at home, that's even slower.
How different is it from DC to AC? What is the speed of charge?
The maximum is about 21 or 22 on AC, but you're not getting that at home.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 7. On a 3-pin plug, it's 3.2 kilowatts.
This is kilowatts?
Yes.
Kilowatt hours? Or, okay.
My home charger is 7.
Okay.
But it was then the manufacturers capped the speed on a plug-in hybrid. So even though mine can do 7, I previously had another Volvo and it took very long to charge. I wasn't getting the maximum 7. So that's another issue.
These are issues that obviously you'd have to consider
as a buyer,
but also as an OEM. Like you said, the Chinese manufacturers have probably thought about these things because you and I spoke about the side. We spoke about NIO that has those charging stations. You just drive in, they drop the battery, switch in, put in a new battery, and you're on your way.
Because, I mean, most range anxiety is completely bogus. I mean, you know, 400 kilometers is a lot of kilometers for the average person.
Yeah.
If you're going to Durban, different story. But how often do we go to Durban? So mostly range anxiety, it's anxiety. It's not actually real. Although you did a trip out into the middle of nowhere.
I did to Walmart instead.
Surprisingly,
I had 170 kilometers to spare on a Mini. That's crazy. So the range anxiety, I believe, is a non-factor. I say that as someone who's driven so many and the distance I drive. But the roads are flat.
Is that not due to the fact that, one, the roads might be flat, two...
You're regenerating.
You're not driving in traffic, you're not driving in conditions that would put the battery under a lot more stress for consumption, almost like cruise. You know when you drive down to Durban, you've done it in the Roadster. If you're speeding down to Durban,
my Roadster does not have cruise control. My Roadster is not designed for cruising, dude.
No, but if you're driving to Durban, right, and you are speeding and overtaking and driving aggressively and all of that, it does consume more fuel. But if you're coasting and relaxing, then it does, and that's a normal vehicle, right? So I can imagine the battery powered vehicles would be the same.
Can I give my top tip for Roadster? Driving to Durban, when you see the overhead camera that does speed prosecution, pull over and have a smoke.
Give you a crazy stat about that Mini. I was scared to drive it because at the time, it based on your driving, when I recharged before the trip, it told me 270 kilometers of range. I was naturally freaking out. But from Johannesburg, from Sunning Hill to Potchefstroom, I netted 20 kilometers of range, and that's 144 kilometer stretch. How wild is that?
Wow.
So it really depends on your driving, your coasting, your cruising.
How you drive,
whether
how much
you're blasting the aircon, which I was not.
So I experienced that as well. Side note, the Volvo 71 liter tank. So I was spot on when I said 70 to 75, 71 liter tank. But when I was driving the vehicle, I found that on consumption as well, you asked about the consumption side of it. When you're driving you're putting pressure on the engine, driving at high speeds or whatever it is you're doing, fuel consumption naturally goes up. And the one thing I appreciated about the plug-in hybrid is you don't have a lag. So you know how the old school vehicles have turbos or twin turbos and there's turbo lag and all those things, right? This is the petrol head in me coming out. I apologize, bear with me for a moment. You don't have that in a plug-in hybrid because for the first 50, 60 kilometers that you're driving, 60 k's per hour, you're driving on the battery. And then the moment you need to switch to the ICE engine, it's effortless. And the Volvo I particularly like because it's 340 kilowatts of power.
Sure, that's powerful.
That's just shy of an X3M, and it's responsive.
So it goes fast. Because the BYD Dolphin, which is like the only one I know, does 7 seconds 0 to 100, and my non-petrol head brain says, isn't that slow?
So
look, EVs are fast. You put your foot down and you're getting the maximum power, right?
So, and the thing with that is because with an EV, all of the torque is available up front, right? You don't have to work through the gears and all of that.
That's also why I love driving them.
The gearbox and the engine, everything's done on the battery here, now, immediate, right?
It's not changing of gears. So it's instant,
and,
right?
And that's the nice thing about it. But at the same time, I then wonder, do you then go the route of a full EV or do you then go the route of a plug-in hybrid? Personally, I'm still on the plug-in hybrid, but that's because I still like the ICE engine. I still, you know, and when I thought about that, something that was very interesting that I saw was Porsche. Porsche has always said, we're not not the EV people. Don't come to us with EVs. They never signed up for this thing. They're not even part of the gentleman's agreement that exists between German manufacturers to cap their vehicles at 250 k's an hour, because they're like, no, we make Porsches. That's not for us, right?
Yeah.
And I saw something online that says that Porsche's working on a new kind of hybrid for them, where it's very much still a Porsche. So you've got the normal ICE engine, but certain things are taken care of by electric motors. So you lose an alternator, you put in an electric motor. You dump the turbo, you put in an electric motor. So certain things that would cause the car to be inherently slower, I suppose, now get replaced with hybrid parts or battery parts.
Yeah.
And now suddenly Porsche has got an EV that outperforms some of its own other vehicles. And I'm wondering, perhaps, is that not the future of where things might be going as well?
Is that a plug-in hybrid you're speaking about?
I'm not sure. I will check.
Because, you know, you asked about the mild hybrids.
Yeah.
Those are the ones where you don't need to recharge it. It internally does everything for you.
So could be one of those.
The Toyota Corolla Cross is a very good example and a very popular car that's doing really well. And theoretically, you can get 1,200 kilometers on one tank.
Yeah, there's the new Renault Duster as well, the 2025, also that built.
So people but who don't want to worry about the charging and the slow charging.
These cars are weird. So again, I'm stuck in the Dolphin because it's a $500,000 car, which is actually quite cheap for a car, which is a scary thought. Service interval, 200,000 kilometers.
So these services are just a formality. You don't
check if your Duracells are still Duracelling.
Because you're not even hitting the brakes. You're not even using the brake pads. The car is regenerating power. The moment you lift your foot off the accelerator, you're not even touching the brake.
That's true. The Porsche, what was the question?
Mild hybrid.
It's a T hybrid system that they've got, which features two electric motors, one in the transmission and one powering an electric turbocharger. So they're now using it in the transmission. They've put it in the turbocharger, as they say, but they've also put it in other components within the vehicle. But it still runs on a 3.6 liter flat six engine. So we're not sacrificing right? And I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Much like with the Volvo, manufacturers in some cases have kept to their identity. EVs, for a lot of the time, the ID4 is one example, which I can't fathom and I can't understand. When you design an EV, why does it look like nothing else in your range? The ID4 looks like no other VW other than the Taygo, which is now a new one. But Volvo, when they designed an XC60 hybrid, looks like the Volvo XC60. You're not getting a different car.
I think it depends on your user base. When Audi launched the e-tron, it was very difficult. They wanted to not shock their customer. It looks very much like their regular cars, except that it's electric.
Well, then they shouldn't have put a R3 million price tag on it, Nafisa.
Have you seen that EVs lose 50% of the value in the first year? So e-trons were going for $1.4 million.
That's it. So that, that's
so the... I should buy a Dolphin next year.
Wait
for someone. Buy a one-year-old EV.
So why is that? So let's get into the price point, because that's the other component that people have to consider when going down the EV road. Is it worth it to now switch to some hybrid thing? Does it cost me more than a standard ICE engine? Sai's mentioning the BYD, but in the BYD's range, you've got the other Chinese automotive manufacturers.
Yes. Oh, sure.
And those OEMs are already pricing a lot cheaper than the traditional European manufacturers that we know. How is the pricing from an EV point of view?
It's still high because of the 25% import duties. Mm. But as I mentioned earlier, EVs lose 50% of their value in the first year. And if you want a good deal, you rather buy a one-year-old or older car.
Okay.
And if the Chinese vehicles are super cheap, you wait a year and a half, you're going to get them even cheaper. Because I know there's a journalist from another publication recently who purchased a GWM Aura for 50% of the price in EV. He literally sold his car immediately and jumped straight for that deal.
Okay.
So if you see a deal like that, then
so the Dolphin will be 250K next year.
So we can save up for that.
There's a problem. So I got two questions. Firstly, is it cheaper to run on power than petrol, or is this
just environmental? It's been proven that per kilometer it is cheaper on an electric.
Even
but the problem
Eskom,
in South Africa is
even with Eskom, that's a valid question.
No. Actually, in defense of Eskom,
can I tell you something about
we're below mid range of power.
I pay currently R2.45 per kilowatt hour at home, so that's my rate. Mm. If I go to a DC charger in Mall of Africa, I'm paying R7.35 per kilowatt hour. So you can't charge your car at home. So if you're getting that Dolphin, you're paying R7 something, right?
But
because
you can't
charge at home.
I see a business model. Someone's arbitraging you R5 a kilowatt hour.
But public charges, you pay for speed, right?
Yeah.
At home, you pay per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
That's
right,
the difference.
Right.
You pay for the convenience of a DC charger.
But now I still see a business opportunity, Si, because if you have a DC type of setup, that enables me to charge at home, whether it's via a portable UPS or whatever.
I don't think your your system at home can handle a DC charger. Never mind that they cost over R1 million.
Fair enough. You'll collapse the whole building's electricity.
Exactly.
You're going to need three-phase power.
Oh.
But my other challenge, and we spoke about this before we came on air. I live in a block of flats. I rent, so it's moot, but let's pretend I owned. Could I get permission to put it in the basement to charge my vehicle? Maybe. And that's a huge stumbling block because, I mean, I got a friend there in New York. They just run a cable out their window into the pavement and charge their car, and that works fine. Because so he's got, I think he's actually got a Tesla. His range is whatever it is. But to his point, like, he never does that every day. He charges overnight. Everything's fine, but he can charge it. I can't charge mine.
And in South Africa, are you willing to put a plug running through where someone, it's exposed? You don't know if someone can vandalize it. So, it has happened before?
No, but so
yeah,
this
the
is,
answer is no.
This is
yeah,
a genuine exactly. concern that I had when I got to one of the malls, right? I got to the charging station, and I was like, but you expect me to just leave this thing plugged in? Thankfully, though, there is an answer for that. When you plug the vehicle in and you have the charge card that you use, it locks the cable in. So someone can't just come and steal your cable and use it to charge it.
But when certain cars reach 100%, it becomes unlockable.
Oh, no.
But that's also setting you checking the app off the car. Some of them allow you to. Yes. The Mini I had allowed me.
They're going
to
switch it and charge my car and your car.
Yeah.
Because there's another problem.
Because that was another concern.
The one base here in Rosebank, which where you can charge, there are only two.
Yes.
Which means if I've gone and watched a four-hour movie, then some poor sod can't.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Nafisa and I came through to look for that exactly. I got here, someone is parked there. She can't use it, I can't use it, and that person that's parked there could be at work for 8 hours charging their phone, and that now means no one can use that for the next 8 hours because you can't unplug it.
I've experienced that, where you go to the charger and someone's using it, it's occupied. Yes. Then what? That's another factor to consider, right?
Yeah, and I suppose this is where we need more infrastructure. We need more charging infrastructure to make it accessible.
At best, you get one or two bays, right? The one here in Rosebank has two bays. If Jimmy showed up with his car there, then it would have both have been gone.
Yeah, so this is...
Hey, look, I still want one. I'm still deeply jealous.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, you need to scout the
okay.
platforms.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I just want to... I remember I was interviewing this chap once, I won't name his name, and he had the Jaguar I-Pace.
Oh,
and
yeah?
I'm live on air interviewing him, and I Google it, and it's like I've never seen such an ugly Jaguar in my entire life.
But and that's
I mean,
the,
Jaguars are beautiful. I mean, the E-Type is the car.
That's the point. And that was the point I made around the fact that why is it... And it's only the EV range, Si. It's only the EV range where in a model, right? So Audi, the e-tron looks like nothing else that they've got in their range.
Yes.
The Jaguar, the I-Pace looks like nothing else. It's like you have the shape of a normal car and you're like, no, we're going to go do something else.
I think they just want it to be distinctive it because it's a new thing next gen.
Okay, then don't make it ugly. Exactly.
Please don't. It's a Jaguar. You make me cry.
So this is what I appreciated about the Volvo, the XC60. It looks exactly the same as the other XC60, the combustion engine one.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, cool. I can live with that.
I think it's also a bit unusual for people to see there's no grill on the car. I mean, that's a quick way to tell a car is an EV, right?
Yeah, there is.
It's full EV.
Yeah, a full BEV.
Full EV.
Yes, battery electric.
Now that you say that, I remember there's models where it's just the grill
is
covered.
It's just weird when people look at you driving. A lot of people are waving at me in traffic. Some wound the window down to say, nice car on the VW.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, it's a bit too, it's getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, it doesn't happen with an I-Pace, don't worry.
No, but I was driving something. What was I driving? Oh, I rented a Jimny once and like all the other Jimnys want to be my friends. I'm like, no, I'm not a sociable person.
Yeah, there are certain vehicles where the other drivers wave at you. But yeah, when the EVs are so distinct, people notice and wave.
But the short answer is, I mean, you're all in on EV,
more
or less. And you're totally, it works and you're happy and you're comfortable.
Yes, that's correct.
But it's also not for everyone.
It's not for everyone.
Right?
I don't do long distance.
Okay, so lifestyle is important. Cost point is important. Convenience is important, such as living in an accessible point of view.
Well, I think all the buildings coming up now are going to consider putting EVs in the basement, right?
Baldwin has to.
Yeah.
If they want any, I mean, Baldwin.
But again, they need to manage the queuing process. But I agree. I mean, new buildings. There's the Hive here in the corner of something and something. And I mean, if they don't have a lot of EV charging stations, and I don't know how you manage it to the point that someone's there and now you're queuing and it's
and
weird
you can't police someone. So even if I get a notification that says my car is full, as you say, Si, if I'm sitting there enjoying a movie, I'm not going to get up from Sturkinik or walk out to go unplug my charger and then come back and miss half of my movie, right? I'm just going to sit through the
maybe
movie.
Maybe you can choose the setting to say discharge the vehicle at 100%, right?
Okay.
But then people could be scared to do that.
Yeah, no, I don't want to miss...
I had a car, it reached 100%, and I was a bit taken aback when I got there. Somebody else had unplugged it and plugged it in theirs. But it was I only felt better because my car was 100%.
But who pays for that? It's very invasive because if you're using my cable and my charge card...
Sorry, it wasn't my cable. It was the one attached to the public charger.
Okay.
But it does feel
weird. So Growth Point Properties have their own... It was Santon City.
I've got anxiety about it.
It does feel weirdly invasive.
No, it feels weird. Invasive. Like someone touched my car.
But hang on, you've got to take your own cable.
No, the car comes with it. Don't worry.
Oh,
but
no.
I know, but some of the DC chargers
no,
come
I'm
with it.
No, I'm using my own cable right now in Rosebank. Yeah, the cars come with your own cable.
So South Africa, Johannesburg.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's why the cables lock into the car, so no one can just take it out of the car.
I'm actually using, the charger doesn't have its own because it's an AC.
Yeah.
Yeah. The DC ones will have their own cable, obviously.
Okay, look, I love EVs. I hope to own an EV one day, but man, this stuff's all complicated. Eh? I just go to a petrol station, of which there are 50. I pull up, chock, chock.
Wasn't Shell supposed to roll out their own EVs anyway?
They might. This was before they sold the business, but that's the perfect note to leave the conversation on. Simon's viewpoint is that we all have different use cases for it. We'd all love an EV, but I suppose the infrastructure still needs to get to where it needs to be for us to all be comfortable to move across. Before we go, we'd love to get your thoughts on the EV world. Give us your experiences around EV vehicles. If you've driven one, if you've test driven one, if you're considering buying one, what are you looking for in an EV vehicle? And do you agree with us that they are, some of them, just way too ugly? Tell us what your what some of the best features are that you've seen in an EV, or some of the features that you would want in an EV, and tell us which the best looking one is. I think we'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you again to Nafisa for joining us. That's The Deep Dive. We wrap things up with Investor Insights. We are taking a look at the FSCA increasing their warnings. They're ramping those up in a big way. But more than that, we're going to be updating something on our preferred pick wall. We're going to be adding something quite interesting that we found from China. So stick around for that. And we'll obviously at the end of the show, as we always do, share our unfiltered opinion of the week. Si, the FSCA conversation around the warnings. There have been a couple of warnings that have come out of late, and perhaps we'll see if we can reach out to the FSCA's consumer awareness team to do some work around what it is that they're putting out there. But a lot of the warnings are centered around the CFD space and people providing unsolicited investment advice and gathering investment information and all of that. And a lot of that is your influencers, your finfluencers, your come make money with me kind of situations. Now, that's always a big thing to worry about. And that's always a big thing that comes up on a regular basis. The FSCA taking it seriously as a regulator means that it is a serious problem. Side note, not financial advice. You know what the show is. You know the disclaimers on the show, and you know why we have the disclaimers on that show. Don't be that person. But yes, I'm happy to see these warnings come out and these things come out, because for far too long, consumers and the public have been the victims of scams that have been perpetrated, or of not understanding what product is being invested in. And as a result of that, you lose money, and then, oh, suddenly it's not my fault that you lost the money.
Yeah, 100%. And there certainly is a ton happening. I was trolling around and I went down a rabbit hole on TikTok over the weekend, and it was frankly just terrifying what's out there. Yeah, someone's he bought Signia and it went to 236 Rand. It's like, no, dude, Signia's never been above 26 Rand. Like no. But of course, you and I know this, but the rest of the world doesn't. Ergo, the challenge. I think they're up against it. I mean, the first problem is that Finfluencer on the TikToks is not regulated by the FSCA. So there's nothing the FSCA can do. Mm-hmm. Now, if they are taking money, the SARB and prudential authorities can all get involved. But the FSCA is there to regulate the industry, and that industry is people who are there, you know, key individuals, FSP operators, those with R1s and RE1s and 5s and all of that type of stuff. Lacquer. But that person on the socials is none of those and don't care for the FSCA. Mm-hmm. So this is a hard one to... And I mean, I remember with Miratrader International, and eventually the FSCA got into their offices, but it was so late in the process. And I remember saying, like, you guys need an FSCA license. And they're like, nope, we don't, because of reasons which were completely fictitious. But they were taking money. So that's different. The person who's just, you know, doing a little WhatsApp thing and stuff, they're not taking money. They're just scamming. Well, so is Miratrader. You know, so this is not so much the FSCA as it is the NPA and SAPs. And oh dear.
It's a bigger problem. It always has been a problem. And it's something that we will continue to, if we can help along the way with our communities and all of that and just shed some light on that, we will definitely be doing that, because the last thing we would want is anyone in our community to fall victim to these sorts of things. They are still out there. The reality is there are some people out there that choose to operate in manners that they shouldn't be operating, and it's for everybody to kind of deal with that collectively rather than for it to be one person's responsibility. But of course, take extra caution caution, take extra care when dealing with these sorts of things, and make sure that you stay on the safe side of things. If something doesn't make sense or is too good to be true, just stay away from it.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the situation is, just stay away from it. So don't look at the other situations that you might be dealing with and say, perhaps this can solve my problems or get me out of this problem. It's probably best not to do that, because you might find yourself digging into a deeper problem. But that's where we're going to leave that. We're going to see if we can reach out to our friends at the FSCA and see if we can offer them any assistance or any help that they might need from our perspective. In our community as well, we'd always welcome the ability to help people there. So if we're able to help anyone there, then let us know in the comments. But yes, stay safe, folks. Stay safe out there. We're going to get to our stock pick. I was trolling through just companies in general, stumbled upon this one, and more than 10,000 restaurants across the world. They spun out from Yum. So Yum China is, of course, listed in China. Yum is also listed in the US. And quite
Yum China is in New York as well.
Yes. Quite listed in New York as well. But quite an interesting stock to add to the wall, because I've always held the view that you don't necessarily go after the consumer spaces like that. So the famous brands and all of that, unless they're doing exceptionally well. So something like the Spur Group that has no debt and all of that kind of makes sense. But when you go to restauranteering and you go to those high consumption areas of business where your entire revenue is based on a consumer, and then the strength of that consumer determines whether or not they will come into your store, that for me was always a risky kind of stock to invest in. But for some reason, I really liked Yum.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't know there was a Yum China. And then I had to go and find out, how did this happen, to your point, spun out. So their own brands, KFC. Now, we need to pause here. I'm not a big fast food person, but KFC. Man.
Have you seen the KFC menu, the new menu? There's a new menu. I will get you the new menu. Okay. I discovered it this weekend. I haven't tried it yet, but there's a new menu.
I don't do the wraps. I'm not interested in wraps, but like that.
But there's chicken tendies,
the rounders and tendies, and all of that stuff. Man, give me some. But then they got Pizza Hut, which is the worst pizza in the whole world. Okay, so win one, lose
balance.
One. Balance, I suppose. What we and then others. They've also got Taco Bell, Lover's Eye, which is the coffee brand, etc.
Oh yes.
And to your point, 245,000 employees, 10,000 stores. I mean, this is ginormous.
And it's diversified.
It's diversified. It is. I'm assuming it is mostly China based, because China's response in the aughts to get people going was build infrastructure, trains and cities and power plants and stuff. And they're still doing that. But their response now is to try and fire up consumption.
Get so people consuming.
They're bringing in things like medical aid and retirement and stuff, so that people save less and spend more. These folks are going to be sitting right in the middle of that.
Right.
And with KFC.
That's it. And I think what I appreciate about it is because you've got such a diversified and wide footprint across store, across product, across whatever, you're not reliant on saying, if our KFC brand doesn't do well, we are in trouble as a business, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's no concentration risk, which is another thing, something like if we localize it, something like the Spur Group has done well with the Hussar Grill under that brand and all of the other smaller brands that they have.
Rockamamas.
Exactly, right? So in the restauranteering business or in the food space, especially from a consumption point of view, I think that diversity is essential. Famous Brands is also quite diversified. They've got the Mug and Bean, the Wimpy, the Steers, the Fisherways, all sorts of things. So you kind of offset, maybe my client or my consumer doesn't like this, or they want a cheaper price point, and that's something that perhaps would serve them quite well here. The question then becomes, I mean, from an international point of view, from a local point of view, we've got Spur on our wall. From an international point of view, where do we put this?
Yeah, because they have an old Beijing Twister. So they have unique recipes. They have like, and that is it's a wrap, but we'll pause them. Crispy chicken, cucumber, spring onion, and sweet hoisin style sauce. It's like a Peking duck.
You are so excited about this.
Ooh, I'm hungry for Peking duck. Problem is, Peking duck is for two, and my wife doesn't eat duck.
Oh, that's more for you.
For lunch. No. More for me.
Actually, there. We'll try it out.
Where does it fit? I mean, I was going to say, surely it's blue chip. I mean, it's got so the dividend CAGR is 8.5% since going. It was founded in 87. Oh, but it wasn't listed back then.
Yes.
It listed more recently.
More recently.
Surely something, I mean, this is proper mature. Surely this is kind of blue chip.
Well, for me, the moment you've got a footprint of 10,000, for context, I mean, 10,000 restaurants in your portfolio when The largest kind of retailer in on the African continent is a Pepco that has more than 5,000 stores across their network. And now you've got almost twice that footprint and you're in consumer. And as you said, consumption is where it's going to be at the moment. I think we can start it off in Blue Chip. Whether it'll stay in Blue Chip is another question, but perhaps that's where we started off.
Cuckoo.
Okay, cool. That was easy. Find something, like something.
Add it to the wall.
Add it to the wall. That's how we do it, right? That's the show, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks again to Nafisa for joining us in studio. Thanks to Sai for being my emotional support friend for the rest of my life. We love what we do, and we continue to do what we do for you guys. Before we leave, as always, we will give you an unfiltered opinion because, well, you deserve one, right? And this week's unfiltered opinion is, I suppose, partly a statement, partly a question, but partly something to think about. And Sai's going to weigh in on this, and I'd like you guys to weigh in on it as well. Give us your thoughts around it. The unfiltered opinion of the week is this. We have become too reliant on AI, particularly for the wrong things. And as a result of that, we have lost all sense of common.
Oh, I think we lost common a long time ago.
Not the rapper, the sense. But yes, I think a lot of what is happening at the moment, a lot of the use cases for AI, people are just getting lazy, right? People are not using their own brains to make simple decisions. Now, you see a lot of it on social platforms. Hey, Grok, tell me what this does. Or, you know?
Yeah.
That for me is, you should be able to answer that question yourself.
But the old fashion of trying to disprove a wild and woolly crazy ass theory on the socials used to be the good old-fashioned way of, you know, doing the research yourself. Now it's just you ask Grok, and to be clear, they lie.
They lie.
It is not hallucinations. At points, they just lie.
So this is my thing around it as well, is I have found that AI should not stand for artificial intelligence. It should stand for aggregator of information, because that is what you should be using AI for. Aggregating large data sets of information and then still using your common sense to arrive at your own conclusion. But it seems we're eliminating the sense of common part of it, and that is deeply concerning, and that's why that's our unfiltered opinion of the week. And that's the unfiltered opinion. That's where we're going to leave it. Before we go, folks, just remember, next week we are taking a bit of a break. There is a public holiday. We like public holidays, so we might miss you, but we'll definitely be back. Until then, investing isn't hard, just try it. The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.